And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and on season two, I'm joined by legendary rock star Patty Quatro, where we take a deep dive into her Detroit roots, the indelible impact of her iconic musical family, her two pioneering all-female bands, The Pleasure Seekers and Cradle, hanging with her homeboys in Detroit Rock City, and so much more. So let's get started.
Sisters told me they had an idea for a singing commercial. I suggested they better talk it over with Lou Crosby. So let's look in on them.
Just a minute. Let's see if I've got this straight. Now, you girls want to open the commercial with the Dodge Dart song.
That's right.
Then we fade the music down.
That's right. And then you come in, Mr. Crosby, and you talk about the car.
And as soon as you're finished, we'll come back and sing the rest of the song. Okay.
Sounds great to me. You ready, girls?
Sure.
Ladies, your places. Gentlemen.
There's never been a car like Dart before. There's never been a car like Dart. What's more, nothing like Dart ever happened to you, 'cause the new Dodge Dart is totally new. There's never been a car so fancy free. There's never been a Dart for you to see. The day you're sure to lose your heart is the day you discover the new Dodge Dart.
Believe me, the girls are so right. There's never been a car like that all-new, low-priced Dodge Dart before. The new entry in the low-priced field. And one reason why is because the Dodge Dart offers you a smartness, a solidness, and a performance never before achieved in a low-priced car. So if you want a car that's built like a Dodge and goes like a Dart, you discover America's first fine economy car. At all new, low price, Dodge Dart, at your Dodge dealers this week.
There's never been a car like, never been a car like, never been a car like Dart, the new Dodge Dart.
Well, before we get to the Lawrence Welk audition, and we're going to talk about that in depth, talk about how your sister Arlene became a part of this. But one of the things that I think is so striking, talking about the generation that didn't want to go into the car industry, and you bring up a really good point, which is your dad nurtured his son to expand his imagination, to have a larger perspective of what life could bring. There was no shame in going into music. There was no, what are you doing with your life? And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about that, because I do think that speaks to the uniqueness of your family, but also the uniqueness of your father and what he gave all of you.
You know, my dad is a complex human being. It's interesting. His passion was music. Okay. He had to do the other to bring up his family, but he wanted his kids to enjoy the arts and be in it and go that direction. He wished he could have become like some big, huge band leader, you know, in the world and the whole thing. He had that drive and that ambition. Susie always talks about it too. She said, in a weird way, his little boy ego might have been a little jealous, you know, because she blew open those doors. It was an interesting psychology moment. And he wasn't jealous of his own kid, but he was envious that he couldn't maybe have gone that far with his music, you know, as far as he did go. So here are his kids, and he's nurturing them and loving the passion he has for the art of music. And it got instilled in all of us. So he was very successful in that regard.
I think that's so important to tease out a little bit, because we all have egos.
Yes.
And if his passion was music, of course there would be some envy. But there is a difference between envy versus jealousy. Envy is, I'm so happy for you, and yet I wish I had had that as well, but I don't begrudge you having it. Jealousy is, since I didn't have it, I don't want you to have it, and I'm bitter that you have it. And I don't, having grown up in Hollywood, in the biz, there were a lot of parents that were jealous of their kids. jealous, and I underscore that. Whereas I don't see that with your dad. And I so appreciate his humanity, if you will, that of course there was a little bit of ego bruising there, but he never put that on any of you. And that's really special.
You said something very insightful right there, because Susie and I have argued about this for decades, the difference between jealousy and envy. You know, as we all made our way, there would be times where we might have envied the luck or the success one of us was having, but never, never the ugly jealousy. We were always so damn proud of each other. And the same was with Dad. Same thing. He was proud, you know, but of course he would have wanted to carry his talents even further. You know, this guy was self-taught. He taught himself piano, had to play everything in E flat. You know, he was playing with stellar musicians. I mean, they were good, and he was the least talented. And he still persevered to bring himself up by his bootstraps and do as good as he could with his music. So I was so proud of him and what he did in his life, coming from the poverty that he came from and what he made of himself and built that agency and the playing and well-known and well-desired all over the area. It was amazing. He really built something for himself. And Mickey got that from him. He got that from him.
Thank you.
Eddie, we've been talking about your extraordinarily talented, gifted brother, Michael Quattro, Mickey, as you call him. And I really want to hear how this Lawrence Welk audition happened. You said that your dad was playing these da-di-da gigs, as you call the music, at these high society clubs. And this society lady, Mrs., it was at Slocum, decided to, well, she recognized Mickey's talents and wrote to Lawrence Welk, the Lawrence Welk Show, which if you didn't hear our last episode, Patty, you gave a great background on the importance and significance of that show in that moment in time. And Lawrence Welk was looking to expand his show a little bit. And instead of, well, not instead of, in addition to his big band, he wanted to have a little band, which was a collection of junior musicians. And Mrs. Slocum thought, Mickey, your brother, would be perfect for piano. So set the stage for us of how this happened. The letter was written. How did you get contacted or your family get contacted? Tell us how this came about.
Well, I'm sure the show wrote my dad through Mrs. Slocum, and an audition was arranged, and my dad and my mother took Mickey out there and they did the audition.
You from Detroit to LA. Sorry.
Detroit to LA. Yeah. So that was a big deal. Dad was beside himself, excited. I mean, come on. And they get there and there's a whole slew of talented keyboard players, you know, trying out for the same position as Mickey is. They only got to like, I think, three or four of them or something. And Lawrence stood at the top of the stage there and he said, "Send the rest home. We found our piano player." Just like that, Mickey was picked. Yeah, he was that good. The minute he touched the keys, you could see it, you know.
Wow.
So he got on, and then he was 15 years old.
Well, I have a logistical question. This is just me being my dad's daughter in the biz. Did they pay for you to fly, or your mom and dad and Mickey to fly out there? Or did your parents? I'm just curious.
I don't know. But my dad would have gladly paid. You know, I don't know if they arranged it, you know. It was an open call, so maybe they didn't in those days. You know, they just said, come out if you want to try out. So I don't know. But Arlene, when they were going to do the shows, he needed to have a chaperone with him. So my parents determined that Arlene would go out with him. And my aunt had a home in L.A. She lived there, my dad's sister. So they had an extra bedroom and they had kids the same age as Arlene and Mickey. So they went out together, Mickey being 15, Arlene was maybe 17, right? So they were going to go to high school out there and finish, and he started doing the show, and they featured him, and there's clips. Hopefully we can get them into the podcast, and it's amazing. It ran for a couple years.
What was the song, the first song that he played? Because we're going to listen to that.
Oh,
I can't remember the name of it. Forgive me. Forgive me, Michael Quattro.
I forget too. I'd have to listen to it again. He did Smoke It's in Your Eyes for my mother once. I mean, she had her favorite songs and stuff. I can't remember. Oh, 12th Street Rag, maybe. He did.
That's what it was.
Hell of a job on that. And it really featured him going all over the damn keys. And he stayed out there for a couple years and doing that. And they featured him, you know, they would take turns featuring each musician in the little band. And he started dating one of the Lennon sisters, got in trouble for that because they weren't allowed to date one of the little band musicians.
I'm not going to let that comment slip by about the Lennon sisters not being so pure. So again, for those who don't know or never watched Lawrence Welk, the Lennon sisters were as pure and innocent as you can be. They were as vanilla, white, prissy. I mean, you just fill in any adjective you want, straight. So if whatever you're willing to share, tell us a little bit more about this adventure with your brother and one of the Lennon sisters.
You know, I don't even know which one he dated. It had to be one of the older ones, but they did date, and Lawrence found out. And he was pretty PO'd about it. You know, you just weren't supposed to date these girls. You know, they were untouchable. And they sang like angels. I mean, they were so good. So, so, so good. It was pretty funny. But, you know, the biggest thing I remember about the show is us little ones in Detroit. I mean, it changed, you know, two people were gone from our family. And we just went out with our lives, school and everything. And they were out in LA doing the show. But came the debut night, and all of the Detroit press was at our house. It was a big friggin' deal. My mom and dad, my dad was busting out, you know, like, oh, he's going to play tonight. It's the first one. And I remember looking at it and saying, oh, my God, my brother's in a box on TV, my pesky, stupid brother. And there he is in the TV. And it so floored me. I mean, that really started the beginning of us sisters realizing he was going to be a national TV star. It was hard to fathom. He was such a pest.
A pest, but also you're 13 if he's 15, correct? Am I getting your age? You're 13?
Well, 12 and 15. I think I was 12, yeah. Oh, God.
Well, and that must have been so jarring. It's not that you weren't familiar with music and playing at gigs. It's not that you didn't have that knowledge. But then suddenly your brother is in another state and he's, like you said, he's in a box on the Lawrence Welk show.
Yes.
It's pretty incredible. And the way he cleaned up, talk a little bit about the way he cleaned up his image.
He looked great. I remember when we saw the first PR shots, with him at the piano, and he just looks like a star in him. You know, he always reminded me of Johnny Carson, his look, you know, a young one. So, oh,
I can actually really see that with your brother in the younger footage. I can totally see that.
Yeah. That was a huge transition point. There you go. A turning point for the kids, all the Quattro kids, because I watched my mom and dad, the joy emanating from their face, that here was the fruition finally of dad giving him the lessons and all that. And here he is on national TV. It was such a big deal. And, you know, I started to realize what was coming. His talent was just undeniable. And it just was a turning point for us kids realizing all that.
Well, let me ask you to talk a little bit about that more. So, and I don't want to put words into your mouth, but if your father had the passion for music, trained himself, played, put that and gave you that wonderful gift of music, encouraged that in all of you. Mm-hmm. And then now your brother is on TV and all of this coming to life for you. And then a couple of years later, you're going to see the Beatles and say, that's what I want to do. I feel like these are three huge events for you. Your father's impetus to push you into music, your brother's seeing it happen, again, fruition is the perfect word. And then with the Beatles, those were your pillars for music.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, being young as I was, and Susie even younger, I mean, we were all flirting with music. But when that Welk thing happened, okay, it was a curiosity with the rest of us that were stuck at home, that it came into bloom and continued to nurture all of us into a heavier vein of music. We realized it. Mike would play a song. This is unbelievable. I could never believe he could do this. He would play a song and he would take it around the world for the audience. In other words, you would think you were in China. You would think you were in Russia. You would think you were in South America. He just would take the entire song and change it as he was playing, and you'd be in that world. It was an amazing thing that he did. He would play Dr. Zhivago, the main song, and you would hear the tinkling of the snow and every part of that song, just with his two hands. And it would make people cry. I remember Susie had him over to England later years, and he played for her party. And the metalheads were there, her kids, the metalheads, okay? And they were in tears by the end of it. They had glistening tears. They couldn't believe his talent. Just, that was who he was. That was his gift. Kissed by God.
Incredible. Just incredible. So how long was he on Lawrence Welk? And again, going back to being my father's daughter, did he get paid to be on Lawrence Welk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he made money. He had to go to high school. He had to do the whole thing, normal life, and he did the show. And he was on for a couple of years, I think it ran. And then he came back and his other life re-began, you know, and all the things he wanted to accomplish came to the fore after that show.
Next, ladies and gentlemen, we have one of our boys again from our little band, Mike Quadro. Mike is from Detroit, I believe. Is that right, Mike?
From Grosse Pointe Woods, a suburb of Detroit.
Well, how far is that from Detroit?
Oh, about 3 miles, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. That's a very nice community, I understand.
Yes, it's quite nice.
Well, it's nice that you left that for a little while to come out and play with us. And Mike has asked if he could play a tiny, a little twinkly piano. So you may take over, Mike.